From 89.7 WUWM Milwaukee's NPR, this is Lake Effect. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Teich. Today on the show, Milwaukee's health department issues a warning to people about the dangers of synthetic marijuana.
Later, farmer Dave Kozlowski is not out in his fields on a below-zero day, but he joins us to talk about the major challenges he faced in the last 12 months.
And there was a number of farmers across the state said it was the worst year ever, and I would totally concur. In 25 years, that was our worst season ever. And it had everything to do with extreme weather.
The artistic director of Cirque du Soleil's new show talks about taking complex acrobatic skills and making them more complex by adding ice to the equation.
The element of the ice is creating another layer of obstacles or challenges, let's say. So when we developed as a company the project of Crystal, we had to really learn about the environment, which is the environment of the ice.
Lake Effect is next. News is first.
This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Mitch Teich.
And I'm Bonnie North. Perhaps you've heard of K2, spice, or fake weed. There are dozens of names for the substances known as synthetic marijuana or cannabinoids. But in actuality, these drugs bear little resemblance to the marijuana most are familiar with, and their impact can be devastating. People have experienced seizures, internal bleeding, organ damage, and death.
Tiffany Cobb is the Substance Abuse and Injury Prevention Manager with the Milwaukee Health Department, which has an ongoing information campaign about synthetic marijuana. She spoke with Lake Effect's Joy Powers about some of the misconceptions around this class of drugs.
They're basically man-made, mind-altering chemicals that are either sprayed on dried or shredded plant material, so they can be smoked or they're sold as liquids. So people will vaporize and inhale them in e-cigarette devices. So it's often misunderstood as a legal or safer alternative to illicit drugs, or just marijuana in general, which is why it's also known as synthetic marijuana.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Is it related to marijuana?
Not at all.
Okay.
It's not at all related. And we were very intentional around our campaign of keeping the two separate because no aspect of SynCan or K2 is marijuana. The only aspect is that the chemicals that you inhale, they attach to the same receptors that marijuana do. So you'll get a similar high. However, the substance that you're inhaling or consuming, none of it is at all any linkage or any aspect or alternative to marijuana.
So from what I've been able to see, there are some legal gray areas where these drugs kind of sit, in part because it seems as though every time they're outlawed,
mm-hmm.
the manufacturers kind of find a way around that. And so when it comes to Wisconsin, what is their legality like? Are these things generally legal? Are they not?
So they are generally not legal, especially to sell. And so it's very hard to keep up with that because of the structure of the chemical. And so there are some known structural subsets of K2 that are on DEA's ban list. But that doesn't necessarily solve the problem because then manufacturers will just in turn change the structure of it and create another substance, which potentially can be more dangerous. And so that's kind of what we're seeing here now with this current batch of K2, where we have been seeing a number of individuals being hospitalized due to severe bleeding, which kind of pushed us to create a public awareness campaign. And so just to give you a little bit of background information, in April of 2018, the Wisconsin Department of Health and Services put out a release letting public health officials and just community in general that there had been a severe bleeding in people who had been using K2. And so there are 324 people as of December who have been hospitalized due to this substance across the nation. Illinois was currently leading, and Wisconsin is right behind with 86 individuals who have been hospitalized due to severe bleeding. And so we wanted to make sure that people were aware of what K2 is, and the health effects behind that. A lot of times, K2 is cheap, for one, and it's sold at gas stations and convenience stores. And so people are accessing it that way as well. And then they're usually packaged to make it look like it's fun and safe, colorful packaging, things of that nature. It's not candy at all.
Well, and sometimes the packages say, you know, potpourri, mm-hmm. not for human consumption.
Yes.
Is that part of how they're able to get around kind of the laws against them?
Yes, that is. Because it has not for human consumption, that is a way that they're able to get around. But sometimes the substance is taken out of the packaging and sold as something else. So maybe sometimes people are buying it thinking that it's just marijuana or any other substance, which is the reason why the issue is greater than just this one individual substance. It's just substance abuse in general, substance misuse in general.
So I used to live in Illinois for a while, and I had a friend who was working at an ER in an area where they got a lot of people who were drug users. And he said, you know, some of the most heartbreaking cases he would see were these synthetic marijuana users, in part because they were doing this huge amount of damage to their bodies. They were often young, and often the damage was irreversible.
Mm-hmm.
So when we're looking at the kinds of impacts that K2, Spice, any of these synthetics are having on people, what are we looking at? You mentioned intense bleeding. What else can happen?
Yes. So smoking K2 obviously can lead to unpredictable and severe or even life-threatening effects. And so it can produce nausea, vomiting, violent behavior, suicidal thoughts. And so some campaigns you'll see nationally associate the effects with zombie. I've seen a lot of that around because of these side effects. You can even experience hallucinations, hypertension, seizures, and other cognitive defects from this. There has been at least one death within our state due to this. So there's a lot of public awareness going out, not just locally, but at a state level as well.
Another person I know ended up using synthetic marijuana. I think a lot of people end up using synthetic marijuana in part because it is so easy to access, but it's also very cheap. Mm-hmm. And you go, well, marijuana is illegal. This, you can buy at a gas station a lot of the time. It does seem as though it's going to be better somehow, or more regulated at least. But what she found when she started taking it was initially it did seem like marijuana. It had very similar effects for her. But as they changed the chemical compound to kind of keep up with the laws, she had worse and worse responses to it. She ended up feeling like she was addicted to it. And she was able to, luckily, get off of it.
Mm-hmm.
But how many people are we seeing who are really addicted to these substances, especially as they change over time?
Right. So I don't have an exact count on those who are addicted to K2 specifically. Some people use it too because it can be used without detection. And so, for example, if you have to get drug tested for whatever reasons, this is a substance that will go under the radar in that regard. Some people use it for that reason as well.
Who are the demographics who are being impacted? I know it has a pretty low price point.
Mm-hmm.
So that is actually a very diverse demographic because you have students, you have people who might be living on the street. And I also know, because it's undetected, that felons, former felons,
mm-hmm.
are a big target audience for this kind of substance. So who are the demographics specifically in Milwaukee who are being impacted?
So those individuals specifically who have been hospitalized due to this vary. The demographics of those individuals vary. And yes, the substance is cheap. And so you will have students and you will have people who are homeless. But it goes beyond that because of the notion around that it's an alternative and the stigma behind natural cannabis that exists. Some people are using this substance to get away from the stigma and the notion, the negative notions behind regular marijuana. And so it's not always the case that people are purchasing this or using this substance because of its price point, but more so because they feel better about, well, it's not marijuana, it's something else, it's an alternative, it's better, it's this, it's that.
I will say the woman who I know and her boyfriend, both of whom used it, that was part of the reason they started to use it, mm-hmm. because they had been smoking marijuana. They went, well, you know, not only is it cheaper, but I can buy it from a gas station. I don't have to go to someone who is invariably a criminal. They're a drug dealer.
Right. Yeah. And I know some may argue that by legalizing and decriminalizing marijuana, it may be an incentive for those who use synthetic cannabis to use natural cannabis instead, and which in turn will potentially decrease the health effects that we see from the use of this substance.
Yeah. With the idea of it not being detectable, when people go into an ER as a result of using these kinds of drugs, does that complicate things because you can't detect it in a urine sample?
In order for them to detect it, or what they have been doing is looking at the blood concentration levels. And so there's one component of your blood concentration level that's been linked to this substance. And based on those levels, they can determine what needs to be done. And they are giving people the option to go through a treatment, which involves vitamin K. So those individuals who have been hospitalized, they have that treatment option as well. And so we are encouraging individuals who have used K2 in the last few months to definitely seek help from their emergency room or just their doctor in general. If you are experiencing any of the side effects, feeling just different, whether it's your physical body or just cognitively having different, just noticing anything different within your body and you've consumed this substance, because, like I said before, it can result in severe complications. And the earlier that you can detect it, the better it'll be for you to be able to get a handle on it.
Yeah. I know the city of Milwaukee is working to try to combat the issue of K2 spice use. What does that outreach look like right now?
Yeah, so about a few weeks ago, we launched a public awareness campaign around K2. And so we have bus ads running across the county that are aimed to account for the various demographics that we see using this substance. You'll also see billboards and these billboards are aimed at specific geographic areas that were identified by those individuals who were hospitalized. And so those individuals were asked where they received this substance. And some of them identify stores or vendors or convenience stores. Like I said, convenience stores or gas stations is where K2 is sold. And so based on those zip codes, not specifically the stores themselves, but just the zip codes, is where we wanted to target the campaign to. And then, of course, there's always opportunity to expand. And because this is such a critical issue, we always welcome opportunities to collaborate with community partners as well, but we wanted to be very intentional about how we spread the word about this issue and just letting people know what K2 is, the different names that you'll see, because some people, depending on your demographic, know the substance as various other names. So there's K2, there's spice, fake weed, sin can, there's various names for it. So you'll see the campaign, the billboard graphic includes those various names because we want to make sure we're connecting a dot in that regard. And then just letting people know it's dangerous, period. It's not better. It's not better than smoking marijuana. It's not better, period, and making it known in that way. And then the campaign also addresses the different health effects that come with it. Because like you said before, a lot of people think it's an alternative and think it's something that's better than smoking marijuana or doing other drugs because it's legal and they can buy it in a store, but it's not at all.
Well, Tiffany, thank you so much for joining us here on Lake Effect and sharing your work with me.
No problem. Thank you for having me. This was a great opportunity.
Tiffany Cobb is the Substance Abuse and Injury Prevention Manager with the Milwaukee Health Department. She spoke with Lake Effect's Joy Powers about the city's ongoing information campaign about synthetic marijuana. For more information, go to WUWM.com.
We'll take a quick break now, and then contributor Dave Kozlowski talks about a profoundly challenging year on the farm. This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee's NPR.
We are back with more of Lake Effect. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Teich. On a below-zero day following a snowstorm, it is hard to imagine the farm fields around Wisconsin at harvest time. But that's what farmers are always thinking about, or about getting the crops in.
It has been a while since we've chatted with contributor Dave Kozlowski about his work at Pine Hole Gardens. Since things are a little slow on the farm, and since the ground is frozen and covered in snow, he had a little time to come in to talk with Audrey Nowakowski about what might have been his most challenging year to date.
I think a lot of folks probably even noticed it at the farm markets and stuff this summer. There was less produce, less variety. It was a tough year. It was a really tough year, and not just for Pinehold or not just for southeastern Wisconsin, but pretty much anybody, southern part of the state, southern half of the state. It started out with what looked like, and to sort of paraphrase Dickens, it started out to look like the best of years that turned into the worst of years. February and March looked nice. A little bit of rain. February, actually, it rained in February, so it was warm. March, it was a typical March, up and down. I was particularly hopeful for the season come the end of March. We got some rain in April and a little bit of snow here and there. But for the most part, it looked pretty good until tax day. The middle of April, we got 3 inches of snow, and then a couple of days later, 3 more inches of snow. But even then, that wasn't dampening my spirits and most of the farmers I talked to, because the weather had been fairly mild. It had been a relatively dry winter. Snow is something that readily absorbs into the ground. And for us folks, I tend to think of it as the poor man's fertilizer, because it carries a little bit of nitrogen with it and a little bit of acid with it, and that takes it into the soil, and that's a good thing. So by the end of April, I was fully anticipating an early season. Then May struck. And by mid-May, sometime around the mid-May, we had 2 weeks of rain. Ours tend to come inch at a time, half inch, inch, but every day it just rained and it rained and it rained. The ground saturated. It was just soaked. We were not getting into the fields. Nobody was. And then May warmed. But May was warm. And so we got the rain and then the weeds took off. So I got wet ground, growing weeds, you can't cultivate, nobody can take a tractor out there, crops get lost in the weeds. We made the best of it. I think everybody just sort of said, well, you know, what's the saying? If you get lemons, you make lemonade. People did the best they did, that they could. Some people bought new equipment. I read of some farmers who bought new equipment just for yanking huge weeds out of the field. I was not above going through the field with my mower raised up and mowing the tops of the weeds down. We had to deal with them somehow. But summer went along. We got some crops here and there.
So how did it reduce your crop planting?
August.
With those weeds?
Well, in the spring, it was because it was so wet we couldn't plant some crops. Mm-hmm. Some got in, some didn't. And some of the ones that got in late. Potatoes, peas, onions, those are all planted in April, but we couldn't get in until later. So we anticipated lower yields, and of course that was the case. But we still anticipated yields. It was August that ultimately killed things. The ground stayed fairly wet all summer. We did very little irrigating. And then we got another 6.6 inches of rain in August. That killed a lot. That killed us personally, killed our carrot crop, did a number on our cabbages and fall broccolis and things like that. Sandy estimated that we lost, my wife estimated thousands of dollars in produce losses. You just kind of suck it up. I mean, it was everybody I talked to, and there was a number of farmers across the state, said it was the worst year ever, and I would totally concur. In 25 years, that was our worst season ever. And it had everything to do with the weather, the rather extreme weather. We anticipate that we're going to get, you know, 30, 32 inches of rain every year. That happens. That's what our average is. But usually it comes a little bit at a time.
Right. Not in thirds or, you know.
Not prolonged rain events.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So with the rain and the weeds and that diminishing when you could plant and the crops not ultimately not thriving, now that we are here in winter, you know, it's been very dry. So it's kind of on the opposite end of the spectrum. So what does a very, very oversaturated season, prime season, and a very dry winter. What does that do to your soil quality? And I imagine being an organic farm, you don't necessarily take perhaps any extra measures that non-organic farms can do to use supplemental chemicals or fertilizers or things like that to supplement those changes. So what do you need to do in order to try and sustain a healthy soil and a healthy crop ground?
Mm-hmm. First of all, I would disabuse you of the notion that it's a dry winter. We don't have snow, which might make you think it's a dry winter, and the ground is frozen and you can walk on it and not collect mud. But it's actually, I don't want to say an overly wet winter, but there's plenty of moisture in the ground.
Okay.
Plenty of moisture in the ground. And now we have snow coming up, so there will be more moisture on top of that. The things that we can do, both organic and non-organic farmers really, are fairly limited when it comes to moisture, when it comes to rain. You can't take water out of a field. Well, you can in some ways. You could put tiles in the field and they'll draw some water out. But that's deeper water in the soil and usually not surface water. So it's hard to take the water out of the field in any one or two rain events and easy to put in. The only thing you really can do is, one, put up more greenhouses where you can control the environment better. And two, which is something that I did this year, which I am usually not wont to do, is work up the early ground, plow up the early ground first, so that it will dry in given a wet spring. I don't like to do that really because I'm kind of a soil geek, and there's so much biology in the soil that you disrupt every time you run a plow through it. And it bounces back a little bit more in the warm weather, but you can do some serious damage to it in the wintertime. However, I didn't have a choice. There are crops like onions and peas and potatoes, early lettuces, things like the stuff that needs to go in early. And if you don't get onions in mid to late April, they will never size up as onions.
So I know you have two greenhouses on your property in Pinehold Gardens, but are you considering going into the future, if more seasons are like this with the weather changing, being less predictable, of putting up more greenhouses and having that as another failsafe?
If I could turn back the clock 20 years, yeah, that's exactly what I'd do. But the problem is we're older now, and I'm not sure that we can find somebody to buy the farm. If we could, I would consider the investment and just turn that around to somebody else to run. But at this point, greenhouses aren't cheap. They're not super expensive, but they're not cheap either. And you'd be looking at adding another $20,000, $30,000 of debt. Would we get that money back in the next 3 years, if that's how long we want to keep farming?
Okay.
I don't know. You know, it sort of depends on markets, what you're growing in there and whatnot. So it's crossed my mind, and I do have materials on the farm now where I can put up what we call mini greenhouses. We can put them up very quickly. I can get them up in an hour or two, have them covered, grow things in there, take them down, move them someplace else. But as far as static greenhouses, large things, I think a lot of people are going towards that. It's not what we consider an option for us right now.
What do you think needs to happen this winter, come spring, that will set you up for better success next year to make up for this bad year? I mean, how long does it take to recover from a hard season like this? Or at least that you can recall. I mean, you said this was the worst you've experienced,
yeah,
but in other past bad seasons,
yeah,
you know, does it take than just 1 year to recover?
It would take a couple of seasons to recover. Yeah, it would take a couple of seasons to recover because, like most small farms, we're limited by the land that we have to plant. And so I am not wont to plow up and use land that I wasn't planning on this year just to recoup some of the profit from last year. That just creates greater problems down the road. So it would take a couple of good seasons in a row to make up what we lost this year. And I think that's probably true of most farms in this business. Unless you switch to some really high value crop, you know, for a season to try to recoup. But there's problems with that too, labor problems and whatnot.
So what can consumers do in the off season, in the winter, in order to help out local farms. You know, where can people go? I know we have a few winter's farmers markets here across the Milwaukee area. Mm-hmm. So are those the main bread and butter for farmers in the off season? What are you doing with Pinehold in the winter? Because you don't just stop working.
I wish.
All right.
You know, the winter market at the Domes was really the place to buy produce in the wintertime. And it still is a really good place to buy produce in the wintertime. But a lot of local farms now offer abilities to buy directly from the farm throughout the winter. Most of them have online stores that you can go to. And they will either distribute it or you can pick it up at the farm. But a lot of the farms I know continue doing that throughout the winter. We do that. We don't maintain an online store per se, but we do have the ability for people to email us an order. We pack it. And for instance, there's orders going out today.
So what kind of produce are you able to deliver in the winter?
Unfortunately, it's most of the stuff that people don't want. It's the alliums, onions, garlic, shallots, squashes, beets, turnips, rutabagas, carrots.
So mostly root vegetables.
Mostly root vegetables, potatoes, yeah.
Okay.
We used to maintain the greenhouse year-round and plant spinach and lettuce and things like that. We haven't done that for a couple of years. And that's one thing when you're talking about recouping our losses from last year. I probably should have done that this year. But
do you think it's something you'll do next year?
I think so. Yeah, I think so. Just because we have the facility there, and I feel the obligation to do it. It's not so much the money. It never has been the money for me in this business. I feel I have this obligation to feed people, and if I have the opportunity to grow things, I should do that.
Now, with that attitude, you know, I suppose that kind of answers my question, but it's how do you stay resilient as a farmer? You know, if you and other people that you know in the same business, you know, it's the worst year, how do you carry on?
I don't know. Spring comes around and you just want to do it again. Farmers, and this goes for the commodity folks and us produce people and orchardists and grass-based farm, anybody who's in this business, you are both the world's worst pessimist and the world's greatest optimist. You can't go into this without hoping that things are going to be better. But you don't go into this without planning for the worst. It was tough to psych up for this year. At the end of last year, every farmer I talked to was like, oh, they would say, Dave, I just left stuff in the field. You know, I didn't even do this to the greenhouse. I didn't finish this on the I didn't want to do anything. I just am so tired of the year. And I was with them totally on that. But now it's starting to creep around. Days are getting longer, and I still have the bug. So I will do what I can, and we're a little wiser now for the rain events that we've had. We're not going to pretend that things like that aren't going to happen again. I think they will. We're in an entirely different environment now. Nothing is as it was 25 or 30 years ago. So we just have to prepare for it. We just have to change some ways we plant, plowing, like I said earlier, too. Greenhouses, if you can do that. We know a lot of young people that are going to this, and one of the first things they do is pop up a greenhouse. It was not the first thing I did when I started this. So, you know, people are catching on. But you don't go into this without wanting to do it. And when that day comes, you know, when February rolls around and I just go to my wife, I go, oh, I just can't do this anymore. That's when it's time to hang it up.
But not today.
But not today.
Well, I, for one, am very grateful for your attitude in that. And until we speak next time, Dave, thank you for coming in.
Thank you, Audrey.
Dave Kozlowski co-owns with his wife, Sandy Redens, Pinehold Gardens in Oak Creek. He is a regular Lake Effect contributor, and you can listen to our past farming segments with him at WUWM.com.
We'll take a quick break and then chat with the artistic director of Cirque du Soleil's new ice-based production, Crystal. It opens tomorrow at the Fiserv Forum. You're listening to Lake Effect from Milwaukee's NPR.
Lake Effect continues on 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Mitch Teich.
And I'm Bonnie North. Just in case you thought Milwaukee wasn't already cold enough this week, the Fiserv Forum is getting in on the Arctic action. Wednesday night, the arena hosts its first show that requires a sheet of ice. Cirque du Soleil's first ice-themed show, Crystal, runs Wednesday through Sunday at Fiserv.
The show features the company's signature stunning acrobatics, such as trapeze work, but adds complicating factors such as ice and ice skates. It means acrobats become skaters and skaters become acrobats. Fabrice Lemire is the artistic director for the show, which is based in Montreal. We reached him by phone before he came to Milwaukee. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Mitch.
Could you start by explaining your role as the artistic director for this show? Where do you enter the process as the show is developed?
I enter early on during creation, but more as an observer to see what will be coming my way when the show is in operation. That means that while the creative team is developing the project with the performers, with the conceptors, the designers, I am in the back area just looking at it and see what's going to be the challenges when the show is going to be in operation, what is there room to push the performers in the artistic development or the acrobatic development, what could also be the challenges on covering performers we may need a break for whatever reasons, you know, the backups numbers, the backup performers, rotations when they need be. So this is very much the first aspect of the role when the artistic director step in and take on the child. While I'm talking about the child, I'm talking about the product, the show itself, and it's passed on to me in operation. When it's in operation, my role is really just to stay true to the identity and the essence of the way this production was created, as well as giving the project its own DNA in the sense of development and growth. So we continue to enrich the content. So you challenge the performers to get better and you know, better transitions from one act to the next. So the storytelling is certainly seamless to go from one section to the next. And I think my biggest part of my role is to be there for the well-being of the performers and the employee. That means that while the show is rolling and we are touring, I want to make sure that everybody is healthy, healthy on stage, but also healthy in their mind. So my role is to be there as some kind of a mediator and facilitator in case of somebody's going through a personal crisis. Can I allow these performers to go on stage tomorrow if there is something at home with troubling he or her? So there's a lot of those backside support that, of course, the audience will not see, which is also associated to my role.
Well, and I imagine in a discipline that is as technical as both skating and acrobatics, that part is especially important because if the performer isn't mentally prepared, a lot could go wrong.
Anything can go whatever way it wants. You know, this is the surprises of doing a business where you defy gravity. And you're correct, Mitch, by saying the element of the ice is creating another layer of obstacles or challenges, let's say. So when we developed as a company the product of Crystal, we had to really learn about the environment, which is the environment of the ice. It is new to the company. It is new to me as an artistic director. So I had to learn, I had to develop a sensibility for this. And then with my team and the performers, we had to tame the element of the ice. Therefore, when the performers come in, and I'm looking at the angle of the acrobats, when the acrobat goes onto the floor with all those years of training and practice where they are, you know, excellent at what they do, now we ask them, okay, perfect. You're going to be now going into a trapeze and fly, but you're going to have skates on your feet. The same thing for a juggler. Go juggle, but on the surface, which is not a hard surface than you're used to. So there is a lot of practice behind. There is a lot of questions and obstacles that we had to face. And how do we just either get around those challenges or at least tame those challenges so we're actually better at what we do.
Right. You say tame those challenges. It sounds to me like the idea is to be able to do this on ice without compromising the artistic style that Cirque du Soleil is known for.
Absolutely. And sometimes, interestingly enough, the ice allow us to actually develop a new avenue of expertise, or simply of a new avenue. Then I'm going to give you an example of how do the ice element allow us to move onto the floor a lot faster because of the creating the notion of speed. So the skaters could glide, change direction a lot quicker than what we have done in the past on our shows on the hard surface. Another element which is fascinating to me, which was the surface of the ice being white, we can project and change the landscape. So we don't need as elaborate props and sceneries to move around the floor. We can just create with visual. So there were so many elements. And, you know, when we were learning about the challenges of the ice, it also opened new doors to develop new tools and new technology that we didn't have in the past.
So how hard is it to cast a show like this? Were you looking for skaters with acrobatic skills or acrobats with skating skills? Or is there actually a group of people out there that already has both of these things?
Both. I think what we did is that we look at the acrobats. We were good at what they do, but also open-minded to explore the territory of the ice. And vice versa. We went to the skaters. Same thing. We came in with the techniques and a bag of goodies, and then we told them, all right, you're going to bring your expertise. However, we'll ask you to open to develop more acrobatic skills here and there. An example, we have a gorgeous duet in Act Two, which is very much the combination and the marriage of two forms, acrobatic and the pure acrobatic of the strap artist and athlete and a female skater. And the female skater was asked to condition to be able to fly onto the arms of these strap performers. So she had to develop strength on her upper body, something which may not be required for a professional skater. And vice versa, or acrobat, male flyer on straps, had to learn how to be able to land and glide or grip on a surface, which is the ice. So at the end of the day, it's finding the profile, either skater or acrobat, who is open-minded to explore the territory of the ice.
You came from a dance background, if I'm not mistaken. What was the hardest part for you to comprehend and maybe master about being able to achieve this kind of artistic vision on ice?
I think, you know, I left my dance career a good 15, 20 years ago now, and I've been working for Cirque for 10 years. So I am familiar with the environment of the circus world and acrobatics in general. The skaters, interestingly enough, remind me a lot of the ballet dancer in regard to the mindset, in regard to the preparation, the sensibility of the space, the warming up time and the mental and physical preparation. So there is something that even though I never professionally skate, I was familiar with the mindset of the skater at large. What I had to learn is basically for me being able to just stand on the ice. You know, you anybody explore and express this in the winter, you see snow outside, you know there's going to be ice somewhere. You walk carefully. You go outside your door. You are not going with the same enthusiasm down your stairs if it is ice cold outside. This is exactly the same physical reflex that we have when we step onto the ice for the show. It's the same thing. So then you become familiar, but there is always this little voice in the back of my mind which tells me one day, even though I will wear my safety kit to go on the ice, there's always a little voice telling me, okay, walk slower, Fabrice, don't rush to point A to point B, simply because the ice might surprise me and I will be in my butt.
And we don't want that.
No.
Well, and so if I understand correctly, Crystal is actually the second Cirque du Soleil show you've worked on that has included ice. There was Quartz before this, right?
No. Quartz was simply a creative name than we had before we decided to give the real title of the show, actually. So Crystal is Quartz. So there's only one. It is our first production on the ice. And it was the first time to actually explore the element of the ice. I love it. I think it really comes at the right time. The company, with the 30 years of expertise and experience to gather all their knowledge in regard of the live entertainment and circus, decided to take a route for that show. I am not saying an older show will be on ice from now on, but to decided to explore territory which is foreign to them when we took on the project of Crystal. And what I find beautiful is that it's what I called the, in French, it's called the remise en question. When you question your place in the artistic platform, in the creative platform, that means you go into a territory when you don't know to learn about what you do and also to bring new elements. The last show I was in, Mitch, was a production called Torrick, which is a collaboration with James Cameron on Avatar and Lightstorm. It was the same thing here. We went into a territory of a show like a movie like Avatar to learn about the mastermind behind Avatar with James Cameron and his team. And we are continuing to be a driving force as a company, as an institution, because we're able to partner with those genius outside. So Avatar on one hand with James Cameron, Ice Element on the other side with Crystal, it allows us to open new avenues and in the same time to touch a different demographic of audiences.
Well, and as someone with this artistic background, this has to be professionally and personally fulfilling to be able to continue to grow throughout your career like this.
You're right. I mean, at the end of the day, if I'm very selfish about my journey as an artist, you know, even though I'm on the backside, it is all about the learning curve, the collaboration. At any level, you know, earlier on you asked me about being the artistic director. I don't see myself as a boss. I see myself as a collaborator at any level with the people I'm working with, the performers on stage, in the backstage, my team, the technical team, the conceptors, and at the end of the day, everything that they give to the audience or give out, feed me back and feed my artistic vision or my artistic appetite to where I'm going with my own creativity.
Well, Fabrice Lemire, I am very much looking forward to seeing this. Merci beaucoup. Thank you very much. And we will see you on Wednesday.
My pleasure. Thank you very much, Mitch.
Fabrice Lemire is the artistic director for Cirque du Soleil's show, Crystal. The ice-based show opens Wednesday at Fiserv Forum, and it runs through Sunday. You can see photos and read more about it at WUWM.com.
Now, if the snow and the cold has you ready to get out of Dodge, our travel contributor has some modest and some more ambitious places that you might want to visit in the coming year. We will speak with her when Lake Effect continues in a moment on WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. It's Lake Effect. I'm Mitch Tyke.
And I'm Bonnie North. Cold, snowy weather is not unusual for the upper Midwest, but this week's weather might be testing the patience of even the most devout fans of winter. Well, at the very least, it might have you thinking about at least a brief getaway.
And whether traveling was a New Year's resolution for you or you have a longtime bucket list in mind, contributor Andrea Kahn has some suggestions for travel in our figurative backyard. Welcome back to the show.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
First of all, you know, I'll say as in self-disclosure here that I don't always subscribe to the idea of bucket lists. Sometimes I like to leave things open to spontaneity and have something
Absolutely.
Show up that was unexpected. But of all the things for which one might have a bucket list, travel is not a bad one.
Exactly. We at the Family Backpack love to talk about, instead of New Year's resolutions, what are our travel resolutions for the year? So, and that's where bucket list comes in. And I think, you know, bucket lists, I personally do a bucket list every winter of things that I want to do in Milwaukee with my kids. I do one in the summer. What are the things we want to hit over the summer? So I think bucket list also doesn't need to be hopping on a plane and doing a safari to Africa, although that's a great bucket list idea, but it doesn't have to be. It can be much, much smaller. So one of the pieces that we just wrote actually talks about Midwest bucket list, because there's some really great destinations here in the Midwest that are close by and drivable and affordable. So one of our first tips is St. Louis City Museum. It is a 10-story or 10 floors reclaimed building materials museum that has a giant treehouse. It has a circus ring on the third floor that offers daily live acts. It's like nothing you've ever seen before. St. Louis is about 5.5 hours or 6 hours away from Milwaukee.
So a pretty easy weekend trip.
Easy weekend trip. And honestly, this museum is so epic. It is worth just going there for this museum. Huh. So that
I've never heard of this museum.
It's incredible. So that is one of our bucket list. Door County is another one. If you live in Wisconsin and you've never been to Door County, go.
I'm raising my hand right now.
You have to. It's so beautiful. It's very different than the rest of the state. I feel like there's definitely more trees and lake, obviously, than there are people.
And there are people listening right now who are like, I can't believe he has never been to Door County. The rest of my family has been to Door County.
Yeah,
I have not.
I've traveled a lot around the world, and I think it honestly offers the best sunsets I've seen anywhere. They're just stunning.
So we're having this conversation in January.
Yes.
Is Door County doable in the winter?
It is. So we actually just did New Year's Eve and spent a long weekend over New Year's Eve in Door County, because it's great for outdoor activities like snowshoeing and the ice fishing and cross-country skiing and other types of things. That's obviously great in the summer because of all of the lakes and Lake Michigan. And then in the fall, it's beautiful for the leaf change. So it really is a year-round place to go and visit. Another Midwest location on our bucket list is South Dakota. I just took my husband and I and the three kids to South Dakota this summer. We did old school road trip. It's about 9-10 hours away, depending on where in South Dakota you're going. You have the Badlands, then you have Mount Rushmore, you have Crazy Horse Memorial, followed by Black Hills. You have Custer State Park, which is just amazing. There's tons of great animals, from coyotes to antelope to bison. Deadwood is just up the way, where they have Wild Bill Hickok and Calamity Jane, if you like the Wild Wild West.
I assume Wall Drug is still there.
Wall Drug is still there. We stopped by for a few minutes.
Did you get to the Mitchell Corn Palace?
You know what? We did not have time for that. And as we did this trip, we're actually thinking about going back there again next summer on our way to Yellowstone, another great bucket list place. Because we ran out of time. In a week, we didn't get to everything because there really is that much to do out in South Dakota. So, you know, again, bucket lists don't have to be these hop on a plane, go to these, you know, crazy places overseas. Sometimes it's approaching it as you have kiddos that love pirates. So where are places in the United States you can help, you know, embrace that? So a couple that we really like are in the city of Charleston in South Carolina. There's a great pirate tour with kids. The lady has a talking parrot that goes on her shoulder. They're all given fake foam swords and they learn how to sword fight and all the pirate language. There's a pirate dinner adventure in Carlsbad, California, which is by San Diego, if you're headed there for spring break. So again, it's sometime embracing that.
You can always go to a Pittsburgh Pirates game.
You can go to a Pittsburgh Pirates game. There you go. East Coast plug.
Might stretch things a little bit. But
absolutely. Another bucket list thing is looking at the national parks we have in this country. They're so beautiful. They're so diverse. And another idea is to rent an RV and do an RV trip out to, you know, some of the parks. If you're looking for more international bucket lists for families, Costa Rica is a super hot spot. It's easy to get to. It's an easy country to travel within. You can do things like zip lining through a rainforest, which is pretty bucket list.
I hear it is a little warmer than Wisconsin in the winter.
It is a little bit warmer than Wisconsin in the winter. If you don't care about the colder weather, Iceland is another huge one. There's opportunities for whale watching, going and doing some off-roading to find waterfalls.
There are a lot of discount airlines that fly to Iceland, too.
Icelandic ponies, there are. I mean, if you're not locked into a certain time of year to go, keep an eye out for WOW, W-O-W, or Icelandic Airs. And sometimes they have airline tickets as cheap as $99. And that's kind of like, those are usually last-minute tickets, kind of to your, you know, just spur of the
right
moment. Another great bucket list destination, I think, for families is Ireland, specifically the southwestern part, the Dingle Peninsula. They filmed some of the last two Star Wars there. It's absolutely stunning. Obviously, everyone speaks English. If you have kiddos with food allergies, every single menu there is labeled with everything that could cause an allergic reaction. So it's a very safe, easy country to travel, again, with kids that have allergies. And the people are just so nice. They have a great farm-to-table movement. So I think Ireland, especially if you haven't traveled outside of the United States yet with kids, that's a great first country to start in Europe.
Great to think about bucket lists for kind of every budget and every kind of travel scale.
Yes.
Andrea Kahn, Happy New Year. Thanks again.
Yes, Happy New Year to you too. Thanks so much.
Andrea Kahn is the chief travel officer for the website The Family Backpack. She's an occasional Lake Effect contributor. You can find her list of Midwest travel suggestions at WUWM.com. And that wraps up today's edition of the show. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Tyke. Thank you so much for tuning in today, and I hope you'll be with us again tomorrow at 10 for another Lake Effect on listener-supported 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR.
Fresh Air is next, so stay tuned. It is 11 o'clock.